This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Talia.
Hi, Tanya.
How you doing today?
Today's a good day. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Maybe.
I'm 6 feet above the ground, so it's a good day.
It's a good day. Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of Crimes and Consequences. And before I tell you today's episode, I would just like to remind everyone to please subscribe or follow on whatever app you listen to us on.
Yeah, it really does help. And it's super easy to do.
It is.
Just click that little button. Just right there. Do it.
So with that, I'm going to tell you a story today that started in June 1980. At the time, 18-year-old Gina Hall was a freshman at Radford University, located in Radford, Virginia. She lived in Radford with her older sister, Delana, a graduate student, while both took summer courses. So they're going to summer school, so obviously it's June. Gina was a beautiful girl. She was well-dressed, pleasant, soft-spoken. She was popular with her friends, as well as older people. Like, everybody just seemed to love Gina. She had a very close, tight-knit relationship with her family, especially with her dad. She was the type of daughter that never gave her parents any trouble.
I like those kind of kids.
Me too. She was athletic and she loved dancing. She and her girlfriends would go out dancing all the time on the weekends and just dance the night away. She also went to church frequently, and she didn't drink or smoke or take any drugs. If she did have an alcoholic drink, because at the time in Virginia, the drinking age was 18, she'd probably just have one, but she always told her friends she preferred the virgin version of drinks because they tasted better.
Well, that may be true, but that's only the first one.
I know.
After you have a couple with a little alcohol, right. they taste fine.
They taste awesome.
You just got to get through the first one.
Gina never seemed depressed or sad. She was very upbeat, and she was also the type of kid that didn't go anywhere without permission. So it wasn't like her to just pick up and go somewhere.
She sounds amazing.
I know.
Way better behaved than I ever was when I was 18. Goddamn.
And now.
That's true. That was a good one.
You're welcome. She was modest and self-conscious in the way she dressed and her opposite sex relationships. This was a result of an accident that she had in early childhood. When Gina was 2 years old, her pajamas caught on fire from a gas stove, and she was badly burned.
Oh, geez.
I know. She had several skin grafts at the University of Virginia Hospital and had permanent scars on her right side, abdomen, upper right arm, and right thigh. So it was widespread.
Wow. That's awful.
I know. And she was just really self-conscious about those scars.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I would be.
Absolutely.
Especially, she's a young girl. For example, when she went to the beach, she would stay covered up with her towels until she actually got into the water.
Well, kids are cruel.
Oh,
so
for sure, right? When Gina was 10, she had to return to the hospital for additional abdominal skin grafts because of the grafted skin's inability to stretch as she grew. This poor girl, right?
Damn it.
Been through hell. She told her stepmother and sister that she was afraid if she ever became pregnant, her skin wouldn't be able to stretch properly.
Oh, I never even thought of things like that before.
Right?
Wow.
Gina didn't really have a relationship with her mom. Her mom was home when this accident happened, and so she dealt with a lot of guilt after it happened, and she ended up not being part of the family. Her parents divorced, so her dad got remarried relatively soon, and that's why she's close with her stepmom. Gina didn't really date. She mostly went out with boys just as friends. She was only 5 feet tall. She weighed about 107 pounds. And she was so short that whenever she borrowed Delana's car, she had to move the seat so far forward that Delana, who was 4 inches taller, couldn't get behind the wheel unless she had to move the seat back. As I mentioned, Gina was taking summer classes. Delana was too. So Midterm exams were during the week of June 22nd to 28th. Gina finished her last exam on Saturday the 28th. It's kind of weird they had tests on Saturday, but whatever. She was in a great mood and she wanted to go dancing at the Marriott in Blacksburg, Virginia. Delaina was too tired to go, but she did let Gina take her brown Chevrolet for the evening. Gina left about 10 p.m. wearing a white jacket and white high-waisted pants over a purple bodysuit with matching shoes.
So why not?
She was ready to
boogie. Why not?
I know. She was wearing an ankle bracelet that was made of gold and it had two interlocking hearts on it. Before she left, Delaina told her that she looked absolutely beautiful. Gina usually never went out by herself, and as far as Delaina could remember, this was the only time she went out by herself. Delaina didn't know if Gina expected to meet up with friends, maybe that she knew at the Marriott.
That's what I was just going to ask.
Yeah, she wasn't sure. This would be the last time that Delaina ever saw Gina again. Delaina had been asleep for some time after Gina left, and she was woken up by a call from Gina. And she said Gina's voice sounded kind of out of character, anxious, just really nervous sounding.
And they didn't have cell phones back then.
No.
So she's got to be on a landline.
She's on a landline. The conversation lasted about 2 minutes. I'm not sure what the conversation consisted of, but Delaina said the time that the call came in was about 1 a.m. And that was the last time she ever heard from Gina. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I'm going to tell you about some other people. 27-year-old Bill King was really close friends with a 28-year-old guy named Stephen Epperly, who I'm going to call Steve. The two knew each other since they were both small children. And on that Saturday night that Gina went out, Bill and Steve planned to go to the Blacksburg Marriott for a night out. Bill picked Steve up in his car about 10 p.m. They first drove to Bill's mother and stepfather's home. They're Mr. and Mrs. Davis, because I will refer to them later. They had a home on Claytor Lake, and they were just making sure that the house was okay. The Davises were away on vacation and had asked Bill to check out the house occasionally because there had been some vandalism in the area recently. The house was fine, so Bill and Steve drove to the Marriott, and they got there about 11, and they joined three friends, one of whom knew Gina. So Gina was there, and that's how they met Gina. Gina had arrived at the Marriott around the same time that Bill and Steve did. And although they didn't know her, as I mentioned, Steve danced with her about 4 or 5 times. Later that evening, he asked Bill if he could borrow his car and the key to the lake house. Bill told him, yeah, you're welcome to use the house, but you can't have the car. Steve asked Gina if they could take her car to the lake house, and she agreed. Bill and Gina left in Delaina's Chevrolet.
What were they going to do with the lake house?
Go swimming.
Oh, yeah, it's the middle of summer, right?
Yeah, it's the middle of summer. Like, swimming was something that they often did at this lake house. And when I say they, I mean Bill and his family. And Steve, because he visits them quite often. Later that night, a woman named Robin Robinson. Robin and Bill decided to go to the lake house for a swim. When they got to the house, it was about 4 a.m. And they saw the brown Chevy was parked in the driveway, the one that belonged to Delaina. And there weren't any lights on in the house. Hoping not to interrupt anything, Bill came into the house from the upper level. Down at the bottom, probably beach level, there was probably an entrance.
And a walkout.
Yeah, a walkout. Exactly. Thank you. When he went into the house, he turned on the kitchen light. Steve was in the den on the lower level. And Steve called up the stairs, Bill, is that you? Bill didn't see him, but he called back. He said, I've got someone with me, and we're going to go down to the dock and go swimming. Steve said, well, we've got to leave, meaning him and Gina. Bill told him, that's okay. You don't have to leave. You can hang around. We're just going to go swimming.
More the merrier, man.
Right.
In the middle of the night, getting drunk.
Exactly. Well,
I threw that in.
There probably might have been some alcohol. Probably, maybe. Steve said that Gina had to get back. Robin looked down the stairs, and she saw Steve. And he was wearing pants, but was shirtless. He was wiping his shoulders with a towel. Neither Robin nor Bill heard or saw any signs of Gina. They only saw and heard Steve. Bill and Robin went out to the dock, where Bill sat while Robin went swimming for about 15 to 20 minutes. While they were there, Steve came out of the home through the glass doors that were facing the lake, and he flickered the outside light just for a second to get their attention, and he called out that he was leaving. Him and Gina were leaving. There weren't any lights on inside the home, and neither Bill nor Robin heard or saw anything else, and they didn't hear the car start as Steve and Gina left. Because it's on the other side of the house.
You they're busy in the lake, right?
Exactly. About 5 minutes later, Bill and Robin went back into the house through the glass doors where Steve had been. Just inside, Bill, who was barefoot, stepped in a wet spot in the carpet. He put some cushions onto the floor, and he and Robin laid down on them.
Oh, boy.
He again noticed that his foot was in something wet, and he mentioned it to Robin. He thought it was probably water and assumed that Steve and Gina had been swimming and might have left some wet clothes or towels on the floor before they left.
But it wasn't, was it?
It was water. Well, it was a spot that had been something else.
That's what I was getting at, yes. Tanya. So he thinks he's stepping in water.
It was like a damp spot, thinking that, you know, a towel or maybe they walked in and they were wet, still dripping or whatever. You know, it's a lake house. It probably happens all the time.
Probably not whatever you're going to say. Probably doesn't happen all the time, no. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sometime before 7 a.m. the next day, Sunday, June 29th, a Pulaski County deputy sheriff, his name was Deputy Patton, he saw a brown Chevy parked along the side of a road, and it was near a point where a railroad crossed the New River into the city of Radford. The trunk was open. He wasn't concerned at the time about that because people go fishing in the river frequently, and they park there near the riverbank. So he just thought that was it. Some people were fishing early in the morning. He came back after midnight. In the early morning hours of Monday, June 30th, the car was still there. Its trunk was still open, and the driver's window was down. He checked the registration by radio, and he was told it belonged to someone named Hall in Coburn, Virginia, and it wasn't reported stolen, so based on that information, he didn't do anything further. Like, he didn't go search it or anything. So that same morning where the deputy first initially saw the car, that's Sunday, the day after everybody was out dancing and everything, Bill took Robin home about 10 a.m.
I don't want to know what they did all night.
I know. She stayed the night, and that was that. I'm not going to shame her.
Hell no.
After Bill drove Robin home, he had a son who was 4, and he picked him up. The son had been visiting his grandmother, so I'm thinking it's the mom of the mother of the child, so that side of the family, because his mom is out of town on vacation.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they returned to the lake house about noon because he wanted to take his son swimming. Shortly after, Steve arrived alone in his own car, followed by 2 other friends. Bill took his son swimming while the others pitched horseshoes. Steve was always welcome to use the lake house. He was really familiar with it because him and Bill are close friends. However, he came down to the dock to ask Bill if he might go inside to get a drink. And Bill was like, help yourself.
He was just at his house a couple days ago with a girl.
I know.
And Bill wasn't there. Now he's going to ask if he can go inside and get a drink.
Yeah, can I go get something to drink?
Mm-hmm.
Bill thought Steve remained inside the house kind of an unusual amount of time. And when Steve reappeared, Bill asked him, did you fall in a hole or something? And Steve told him, well, I couldn't find an opener, like to open up maybe a bottle of beer or something. When Gina failed to appear back home by Sunday evening, Delana called 2 friends named Robert and Craig and asked them to go out and search for the car. They found it early Monday afternoon, exactly where Deputy Patton had first seen it. Craig stayed with the car while Robert went into Radford to get a police officer. Craig noticed that there were empty plastic glasses, matches, and other trash in the car, and that the door pull was ripped off on the driver's side. And I'm thinking that's the outside handle. The driver's window was open and the seat was pushed all the way back. Craig thought that was strange since Gina was so petite. Delana also said that the car had been cleaned, vacuumed, and freshly waxed when Gina left with it on June 28th, and now this car is completely trashed.
With a broken handle.
Yes, like destroyed almost, right?
How does that even happen?
Exactly.
You're going to tell me, right? You're going to tell me, right? Okay.
By Tuesday, July 1st, so this is a few days after Gina was last seen, there were lookouts that were being broadcast on local radio stations, like be on the lookout kind of thing, maybe BOLOs, but not by the police. It was just the radio station getting the word out. Bill heard Gina's description and that of the car. So he went over to where Steve worked and said, you know, you better go to the police and say what happened so they're not going to think that you have something to hide. Steve asked him who had told him, meaning Bill, or who knew about it. Bill said, well, it's all over the radio. Plus, there had been some discussion at the weightlifting club where they both worked out. Steve asked Bill, go back to the club and tell them not to say anything. Just kind of like talk it down, minimize it. Not to like just broadcast this news all over the place.
What?
Isn't it weird?
Dude,
it's on the radio, man.
You got a girl miss it.
Right. Just
tone it down. Tone it down, man.
Tone it down. You need to downplay that shit.
Though, because that's not suspicious at all.
Exactly. Also, another weird thing that happened that same day. Steve had a conversation with a close friend of his, not Bill, but a guy named William Cranwell. Steve asked if William's brother, who was an attorney, could represent him. I don't know what kind of law he practiced, but William said he didn't think that his brother would. And then Steve said to William that, okay, next time you talk to your brother, can you ask him if there's anything that they could do to him if they didn't find a body? He said they, and I'm thinking he's meaning, of course, police or authorities. As William and Steve walked outside to Steve's car, Steve again repeated this request, like, hey, can you ask your brother?
Why aren't they saying something like, Steve, man,
I know.
What's going on?
I know, right?
If you said that to me, I would be like, Tanya, what the fuck is going on?
Hey, Talia, can your brother represent me? No, I don't think he will. Okay, well, can you just ask him if there's nobody? What can they do to me? Weird.
That would make me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. William was sure when he recalled that conversation that Steve said the words, quote, a body or, quote, the body. And it wasn't prompted by anything that William had said. Steve was the only one who'd used the words. It was like out of the blue.
I'm not liking this Steve guy.
On July 2nd, so the following day, Bill went to the police to have them interview him. And he went with them back to the lake house that was owned by Bill's parents.
So he's giving them permission to check out the lake house, is that it?
Yes, yes. While they were there, Bill found a broken ankle bracelet on the floor, and he gave it to the police. Later, Delana told police that the ankle bracelet was similar to the one that Gina wore the night she disappeared. Yes, the two hearts. Bill's mom also told police that she'd never seen one like that in the house. Like, she didn't own it. She'd never seen anything like it. A few days later, on July 5th, Bill had another discussion with Steve. Referring to the conversation that Bill and Steve had had the night that Gina disappeared, Steve asked Bill, you did hear her, didn't you? Asking if Bill had heard Gina with him. Bill told him he hadn't heard Gina and asked Steve directly if he had killed her.
There you go.
Right, he's like, come on. This weird shit's happening. Steve told him, Bill, I don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. We'll just have to wait and see.
What?
What the fuck does that mean?
What? We'll just fucking wait and see. Okay, that's not weird.
Steve never directly denied saying, no, I didn't kill her. And Bill asked him, what took place between you and Gina while she was here?
Also, I'm thinking, even if Bill did hear Gina with Steve, it doesn't matter because
she's still missing.
Yeah, she left with Steve, supposedly.
Right. Steve told Bill that there was a little fondling over the clothes and that was it. That's all that happened. Steve also told Bill that he had gone swimming, but that Gina refused to join him in the lake. Bill also told police that Steve had not been drinking alcohol the past 4 years. Because he was, quote, a little hyper, end quote, and was likely to get into fights if he had been drinking.
Belligerent.
Yes, he was an angry drunk. And he actually did get into fights years before when he would get drunk. Bill said, though, he didn't see Steve drink anything alcoholic on the night of June 28th, but who knows what happened when they got back to the lake house. When police from the Radford Police Department went through the Davis house very carefully, minute bloodstains were found all over. Blood was found on the concrete driveway, the glass doors facing the lake, on a light switch in a bathroom off the den. It was on a leg of a chair, on a pair of brown shoes, and on a pair of golf shoes. It was also found on a dustpan and on the refrigerator door.
Wow.
The refrigerator had been wiped clean, but faint blood smears were still visible, along with hair and fibers.
What?
Isn't that weird?
On the fridge?
On the fridge.
Oh.
Also in a cleat of the golf shoe.
Oh, no.
That was
no,
next to the no. refrigerator.
That's not good.
I know. There was a large blood stain about 18 inches in diameter found on the living room carpet just inside the glass doors. So is that what Bill stepped in? It had been partially cleaned up and was bleached out to a faint pinkish color. So it must have been light-colored carpet that when the blood soaked into it, all that could get out when it was bleached, it still left a pink stain. So I'm thinking that was what initially Bill stepped in. The blood stains that I'm telling you about, too, aren't something that just a casual visitor to the lake house would have found. It was something the police really had to search for.
Yeah, you said it was minute. They were minute spots.
Mrs. Davis told police that when she left to go on vacation, the house was pretty much spotless, and there wasn't any reason for bloodstains to have been in the house before they had left.
Especially all over the place.
I know. Before I tell you what happened next, we're going to take a break. The search for Gina, lots of people in the area joined the search for her. There was a group of five friends from her hometown of Coburn. They had been out searching. They found a blue towel in heavy undergrowth, 10 feet from the railroad tracks where the car was near. The towel had bloodstains and contained fibers that were identical to the carpet in the Davis's living room. Mrs. Davis identified the towel as being identical to a towel she had had that was previously unused and was missing from her home. Also missing from the home were an old blue and white towel, a roll of paper towels, a can of Dow bathroom cleaner that had a green plastic cap, and a large handmade quilt.
What the hell was Steve thinking, dude?
Man,
you think you're not going to get caught doing this?
This is messy.
He's not even trying to clean up this.
No, this is just fucking botched.
I mean, he's trying, but really badly.
Exactly. Mrs. Davis later found the green plastic cap that went on that bathroom cleaner by a trash can in the furnace room. She thought it was weird for it to be there, and she gave it to the police. One of the police officers, when they were out searching, found a shoe that was later identified as one that Gina was wearing the day she disappeared on the side of the river where the car was.
So they found one shoe.
They found one shoe. As I mentioned, there were tons of people searching, right? So a group of high school students from Christianburg found Mrs. Davis's missing blue and white striped towel in Radford between a shopping plaza and the river. A short distance away from that, they found all the clothes that Gina had worn the night of June 28th, tied into a damp bundle and stained with blood. Remember, she was wearing white clothes.
They found all her clothes.
All her clothes. And when I mean all, down to her underwear. All of these items were then turned over to the police. A police officer on July 3rd found all of Gina's purse contents under a brush pile about 10 feet from the highway near the river. They were all bunched together. They weren't scattered. And it included her checkbook with its final entry on June 28th.
Like the purse had been dumped upside down.
Yeah, but no purse. On June 1st, Sergeant Hall of the Virginia State Police interviewed Steve who said he had driven Gina from the Marriott to the Davis's house in her car, and that as soon as they got to the lake house, she called her sister. He said he overheard Gina tell Delana that she was at the lake with a man named Steve, that she wouldn't be out all night, and she'd probably be home in early morning hours. Steve said they went to the dock where he went swimming, but Gina didn't join him. Then they went back into the house where they talked for a few minutes, and they had made out a little bit. At this point, Steve said that Gina told him she had once had a bad experience with a man, and that she'd have to know him really well before she could go to bed with him and be intimate. He said that's when they left the Davis house. He left with Gina driving the Chevy. At his direction, he said, she drove him directly to his house in Radford. He got out, then gave her directions to return to Delana's apartment, and he went in the house and went to bed. But Delana said she knew Gina had driven around Radford long enough to know the area pretty well, so she wouldn't have needed directions to get back to her house. By July 2nd, Steve was suspect number one, as you can imagine. So Sergeant Hall arrested him. He read him his rights. He accused him of killing Gina, and Steve denied it. Sergeant Hall said it again, accused him of killing Gina, and at that point, Steve didn't say anything back. As I mentioned, he was arrested, and a trial ensued.
He's like, prove it. I hope they do.
All of the bloodstains taken from the Davis house that were able to be identified were blood type O. The cleat of the golf shoes had a pubic hair in it. I don't know what happened
with
these golf shoes,
Talia. What is this?
And the pubic hair wasn't Steve's, so I believe it belonged to Gina.
And it had blood too, right?
Yes, you said. Yeah.
What?
I know, weird.
I look to you for the answers, Tanya.
I know, it's so bizarre. They didn't have any hair from Gina to compare hair from, but embedded in the blood smears on the refrigerator door, remember I told you there was hair on the door? Even though they were too weak to analyze, they found 5 head hairs that they said were identical to Gina's. So they must have maybe gotten a hairbrush or something from her home. The mat in the trunk of the Chevy contained type O bloodstains, head hairs identical to Gina's, and pubic hairs that weren't Steve. The blue towel that was found in the woods was also stained with type O blood, and they found head hair and pubic hair. It's consistent with what was found in the trunk of the Chevy. They found fibers from the living room carpet of the Davis's home. That green plastic cap from the can of the bathroom cleaner had a hair on it identical to Gina's.
What?
This was a fucking mess, dude.
Yeah, goddamn.
Gina's clothes, as I mentioned, were bloodstained, but by the time they were found, they couldn't identify the type of blood that was on it. Her jacket had bloodstains on the right breast and in the shoulder blade area, in the back, spreading across the right side from her back. The pants also had bloodstains. There were 2 head hairs identical to Gina's on the pants, and 1 head hair identical to Steve's. Obviously, you've probably figured it out. Gina has type O blood. Steve has type A, so it's definitely her blood. During Steve's trial, and I'm mentioning all of this because they still don't have a body, Gina's not been found, so the prosecution really has to rely on evidence to show that she's not alive anymore.
And at the time of the story, it was very rare that they would even prosecute somebody without a body.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was very rare. So they really had to have overwhelming evidence.
I mean, we learned in law school all about corpus delicti.
Yes, absolutely. And
I knew it would come in handy someday.
Exactly.
Here it is.
Fancy words. Exactly. One of the other things that the prosecution really relied on during Steve's trial was they presented testimony from John Preston, and he was a retired Pennsylvania state trooper. He was an expert in the training, handling, and reading of track dogs. He was brought in to help with Gina's case. He had a male German Shepherd that had been used over 150 times in criminal cases throughout the United States, and the dog had successfully followed trails as old as 21 days. The dog was amazing.
I love it when they have names.
I'm going to call him Sarge.
Okay.
As I mentioned, he was amazing. So John and Sarge, arrived at Radford about midnight on July 10th. Neither he or the dog was familiar with the area because, as I told you, he was a Pennsylvania state trooper. He wasn't told that there was a suspect in mind. One of the Radford police took John and Sarge, my made-up name.
We're going to get some fucking hate mail saying that dog's name was not Sarge.
It was not Sarge. I think it's cute. He's a police dog. You know, you get it.
He should have been named Sarge.
He should have been. The Radford police sergeant took them to a place on Hazel Hollow Road, which was where the Chevy had been found, like on the riverbank. And the dog was scented on a pair of Steve's underwear. Like, I don't know how they got it, but they did.
Steve's underwear?
Steve's underwear.
What?
Right. They want to see if the dog can follow a scent, specifically Steve's scent. The dog immediately began what they call a casting search. Then within about 100 yards, so he's kind of like sniffing around, right? He's trying to find the scent. And then within about 100 yards, he picked up on a scent that he was looking for. He left the road. He went through a path that crossed the New River into Radford, and he crossed the railroad tracks. He just went on this route all through Radford. It was really convoluted. Like, sometimes he looped back, like went back and forth, and he was all over the place. But the important part is that the dog finally turned up on a walkway to the front porch of a house. The dog walked up to the front door, and he stopped. At that point is when the Radford police officer told John that the dog had stopped on Steve's front door.
That's right. I mean, Steve had to walk back home
because
he ditched the car.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that where Gina's shoe was, the two towels and the bundle of her clothing had all been recovered at different times and in different places. That roundabout trail was actually the one that the dog went on. So where he followed was where all of those items were found. That's why it was kind of like all over the place. On July 12th, when Steve was at the Radford police station, he was in Captain Williams's office. John took the dog, who hadn't been inside, into the parking lot. And it had lots of vehicles in this parking lot. After the dog again was scented, he made a casting search, of course, again through the parking lot. And he came to the driver's door handle of Steve's parked car. After pausing there, he then tracked into the police station, coming directly to the door of the captain's office where Steve was seated.
Oh, shit.
This is a great dog.
Can you imagine you're Steve?
I know, exactly.
There's a dog just staring your ass down.
Exactly, because when Steve was told of what the dog did on the three occasions, like the one just then, the one in the parking lot, and the one where he took him all over Radford, Steve put his head down on his arms and said, "That's a damn good dog."
I know, and that dog is like, dude, you're going down.
Yeah, that dog's like, ain't nobody getting by my nose. Badass dog. Steve's defense presented no witnesses. At the close of the evidence, the jury was instructed on the elements of first and second degree murder, both. Neither the prosecution nor the defense requested a voluntary manslaughter instruction. As I mentioned, Gina's body hadn't been found, so the court told the jury that the prosecution needed to prove that Gina was dead and that her death was caused by criminal violence. The jury convicted Steve of first-degree murder.
Thank God.
Yes, despite him maintaining his innocence
throughout
the trial. He was sentenced to life in prison. He then exhausted all of his state and federal appeals, and they were all denied. Investigators had always theorized that Steve killed Gina after she turned his sexual advances down.
Do they think the phone call was when she was getting a little, like, creeped out by him?
I think so, yes. But she didn't ask for help. So I wonder...
Or did he make her make that call?
Oh, maybe. That's a good question because I don't know what she told Delana, but she sounded weird.
I've watched a lot of Forensic Files, so I know a lot of things.
So maybe she was under duress making that call. You're right. And Steve had a history of, like, anger management problems. As I mentioned, when he drank, he became angry. I think he just had a really short temper. And I'm not making excuses from him, but I think that's what happened. I think he just snapped. Like, maybe he had drank a little bit, and now Gina, being self-conscious and everything, didn't want to go farther than maybe a little kissing, and he just...
Snapped. Obviously, he removed all of her clothes,
mm-hmm.
and however he killed her was very bloody. It's not a strangulation situation.
No, because I believe he cut her up into pieces.
What?
And then scattered them around Virginia. And I'll tell you why in a little bit.
Well, that's quite a bombshell.
Yes.
Damn, I didn't see that coming.
Exactly what happened.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I know.
You just took it to a whole new level, Tanya.
I know. It's pretty awful. Steve is still in prison today, and every parole application he's made has been denied. Gina's case was the first in Virginia where someone was convicted of murder without finding the body. And just when you thought I was finished with the story, I have an update. I found an article from WDBJ in Virginia from July 2020 that was about the fact that some of Gina's DNA and remains had been found 40 years after her disappearance. Gina's sister, Delana, with the help of a forensic anthropologist in Tennessee, made this discovery. In 2016, Delana reported that a farmer's grandson told the Radford police his family had a secret from all the way back to 1980. He told police that his grandfather had witnessed what he believed was two men dismembering a body in Meadow Creek, Virginia. The men had been driving a white van, and the grandfather always believed the body was Gina Hall's. This prompted Delana to go on her search to find Gina. During a vigil for Gina in 2019, Delana was introduced to Dr. Arpad Vass, who was the forensic anthropologist I mentioned. Dr. Vass had invented an instrument that could detect a DNA that had been buried in the ground. Isn't that amazing?
That is insane.
I had no idea there was anything like that.
I had heard of something
really?
Like that.
Really?
Yes.
After Delana and Dr. Vass got together, Gina's remains had been discovered in 8 different locations throughout the New River Valley in Virginia. Gina's DNA had been found at a lake house at the top of Draper Mountain, on Clayton Lake, along Meadow Creek, and one of Gina's bones was found at a hunting ground often used by Steve.
What?
Right. Isn't this bizarre?
How did he do all of this that night?
I know. And would you really dismember someone in your friend's lake house?
No, I wouldn't.
Because something went down there. All 8 locations haven't been excavated yet, but Delana's working on it, and she's not going to stop until they are.
So is this confirmed that it's actually Gina's bone found?
Yes.
And her DNA.
And her DNA, yes. This was in an article from their news station.
Scattered in 8 different places.
8 different places.
Wow. So what did that have to do with the farm?
I don't know what happened. Because this farmer insisted he saw 2 men, which really kind of throws me too, because who did Steve get to, if that was Gina and Steve dismembered her along with someone else, who was the second guy? It wasn't Bill, because Bill was with Robin, right? So who would have helped him? So even though Delana and Dr. Vass believes that they found her remains and DNA, a lot of people do dispute the fact that this machine even works. So I'm just putting that out there for everyone. It may or may not work. It may or may not be Gina's remains, but her sister believes it.
So what you're really saying is it may or may not be Gina that was spread in 8 different spots even.
Right. So maybe she wasn't dismembered.
Maybe
I don't
know.
She
was thrown in the river.
Maybe she was thrown in the river. Maybe she was buried somewhere. I don't know.
We have no clue.
But we have no clue for sure. No confirmed. So.
Because it would take a lot of time to disarticulate somebody.
I know.
And spread the remains all over.
And Talia and I paused just for a couple minutes to talk about it. And he really only had a few hours. Because Bill came to the lake house at about 4 a.m. with Robin. And Steve left shortly thereafter, maybe after half an hour or so. And then the car was found by the police officer a little after 7 a.m. So that's not a lot of time. So I don't know what happened to Gina.
And I don't know the benefit of cutting her body up and dispersing body parts across a county.
Right. It's just a weird ending to the story. But I had to include it. Well, thank you everyone for listening.
Yeah, and I hope that Gina's family has some sort of
peace
and resolution with this one way or the other.
I know, it's terrible. I feel so bad. I'm sure Delana feels bad that she didn't go with her. I'm sure people have a lot of regrets. I think that's only natural to feel that way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if only, coulda, shoulda, woulda kind of thing. Guilt is an awful emotion. So anyway, thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
And before we go, don't forget to hit the subscribe or follow button, please, on the app you're listening to us on. If you'd like to find out more information about this episode, you can go to our website, crimesandconsequences.com. You can also follow us on social media at Hardcore True Crime on Facebook and Instagram. If you're interested in hearing more exclusive episodes that we haven't released to the public, you can either go to our website, crimesandconsequences.com, or you can join through patreon.com/TNTCrimes. We have over 100 episodes there. So if you like us enough to be listening, you're going to love us when you get 100 extra episodes.
Even if they don't like us enough to be listening, they're going to love us.
You can also sign up for the same episodes, these exclusive episodes, through your iPhone. If you go to the podcast app and you search for our show, there is a button on there that says subscribe.
Well, look at that.
So easy.
So easy. If only I had an Apple phone.
Well, I do.
It's not so easy if you have Android. Don't go to Apple and try to subscribe.
No.
Before we go, though, Tanya, we absolutely 100% have got to acknowledge our amazing subscribers that have done exactly what we just suggested to do. We got to do some shout outs.
Yes, we do.
We love these people.
And if you're an Apple subscriber, we don't get the names, by the way, of those of you who subscribe. So if you'd like a shout out, please contact us at contact@crimesandconsequences.com.
Yeah, what's your name?
Yeah, we'll be happy to check it out.
We're going to make you famous for about 2 seconds.
Well, the first person I'm going to mention is one of our Apple subscribers. His name is Jeffrey, so thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Then our new Patreon members are Hillary, Owen, Amy, Sarah, Jennifer S., China, Jen with two N's, Kelvy and Ott, Pam G., Sarah A., Nick W., Reagan K., Jennifer G., Megan M., Lauren, Brittany K., Michelle, A.A. White, Jane H., Michelle D., Samantha, Lacey, and last but not least, Raquel.
Thank you, guys.
Yay! Yay! Thank you.
You rock. You're amazing. All you guys that are listening right now, we can't thank you enough. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen to Crimes and Consequences. And we hope you have a great week.
Absolutely. And until our next episode,
don't kill each other.
Bye.